Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. One home game down, 40 to go. After tonight, they have 40 road games to go as the Jets and the Wild will do battle tonight in St. Paul, Minnesota, the first road game for the Jets early on in this 2016-17 NHL season. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's how you can reach us in studio. Facebook.com/Illegal Curve and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news, including all the pregame audio from tonight's contest in St. Paul, available at IllegalCurve.com. I say good afternoon to gentlemen. Ezzy, Dave, good to see you both. An exciting start to the season on Thursday night for the Winnipeg Jets, staging an epic comeback. Coming back from that three-goal third-period deficit to defeat the Carolina Hurricanes, they look to make it 2 games in a row with tonight's game in St. Paul coming up in about 6 hours' time.
Yeah, guys, and before we get into the home opener, we should also welcome back Michael Remus, who's back with IC to start the show, opping the show. It's been a while, so it's good to have Remo back. Yeah, absolutely, Drew. You know, I was out in Falcon Lake, so I wasn't at the MTS Center for the game, but I was watching it on TV, and it sure was a sloppy start to the game for the Winnipeg Jets, and when they went down 4-1 early in the third period, Dave, it certainly didn't look like the Jets were going to win their home opener, but what a comeback, and it was the way that they came back which was so impressive. Blake Wheeler starting it off with that shorthanded goal, and then Patrick Laine getting the Jets within one on the power play, Matthew Perreault tying it up, and then obviously Mark Scheifele getting the overtime winner. It wasn't the way that you would map it out if you were Paul Maurice and the coaching staff, Drew, but you got to give the Jets credit for battling, overcoming adversity, a horrible start. And, you know, it started with the defense and the way they played in their own zone was just awful. Connor Hellebuyck did not play well, in my opinion, in the home opener, especially on those third and fourth goals. The fourth one by Victor Rask, I thought, was a very weak goal. But you got to give the credit where it's due. And the Jets battled, they came back, and they got a big 2 points. And, you know, you don't want to start the season off with a loss in the win-loss column, right? So give the Jets credit. And I think that first game is really going to show you what to expect with this Jets team. I think the Jets can get into the playoffs this year. I picked the Jets to get into the playoffs, but I think we're going to see a lot of unpredictability when it comes to this Jets team. They're going to score a lot of goals. And when you have a guy like Patrick Laine in the lineup, you know that he's going to get his goals. I think a few people, Dave, were worried early on in the season. He didn't get any points during the preseason, I should say. So, you know, it was an exciting game, a great one for the fans. You know, Van Halen jump was going in the MTS Center, but certainly when you look at the way the Jets played defensively, they have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, you know, it was a good game. It was improbable and unpredictable, seems to be a buzzword now around the team that a lot of people seem to be using. But you know what? They really didn't play very well for the first, I would say, 45 minutes of the game, and then they really showed that they were prepared to, you know, with these young guns in the lineup, kind of let the horses unleash the horses and go for it. And
is that like when Mitch unleashed the fury?
Yes, okay. That's exactly what it was.
Okay, I just want to make sure we're on the same page there.
Yeah, no, so I mean, I think it shows you what you can do with this young team is that they're not going to say die. They don't really know that they're not supposed to come back. I mean, you saw plays like, you know, from Kyle Connor who had some nice flashes. Laine, you know, I mean, there was some tentativeness to his game early on. But by the third period, I mean, Drew and I were at the game and we were sitting there and you're looking at each other and you're kind of like, wow, this kid's got skill. I mean, when you actually watch him in a game and, you know, he's adjusting to not having as much time, not having as much space on, you know, North American ranks as he would in Europe. But, I mean, his talent level is unbelievable. That goal was spectacular.
That was a top five NHL shot. I mean, there's a lot of players in the NHL who can't pick that corner and can't unleash the shot like Patrick Laine does. And that was as he was advertised at the start of the year. And that was sort of the first opportunity for Jets fans at home. They've seen it on TV, but to see it in person, I mean, that shot by Laine to beat, you know, Cam Ward, who's certainly not the Cam Ward of, you know, 10 years ago, but he's still a solid goaltender for the most part. I don't know who's saving that shot when you can pick the corner like that.
And it was a wrist shot. I love that wrist shot.
Well, and it was just a bullet.
Perfect screen by Drew Stafford, who was standing in front of Ward. But it's interesting because we were talking about it yesterday at Just Practice, and Wood Ward have been able to stop it had he not been screened, because that shot was as powerful as it was. And you know, interestingly enough, and, you know, I was at the MTS Center yesterday for the Jets practice. He was doing that throughout practice. Like, he had some shots yesterday that you were just like, you're blown away by this kid's talent. Really, it's unbelievable.
Well, you know, they have last year, the mantra of around the Jets team was they weren't able to come back in the third period.
Right.
We know that it took until you know, mid-March before the Jets won a game in which they were trailing entering the third period. They were 0-24-3 entering the third period before that win against the Colorado Avalanche in mid-March. So, you know, just to get sort of the monkey off the back, if you remember way back when, you know, to the first or the second year when the Jets returned, it was they could never win in the back-to-back situation.
Yep.
And then they took care of that monkey early in the following year. This year, 0-24-3 entering the season in terms of can they win when they're trailing. They're down 4-1. It's a game they have no reason to even be in, given how they played for the first 45 minutes. And then all it takes is that one sort of soft pass by Jeff Skinner on the power play. Blake Wheeler intercepts it, goes in shorthanded, 4-2. And in the blink of an eye, the Jets had staged the comeback entirely.
And realistically, they could have folded. You know, I mean, you've got a power play goal against you with a delayed penalty call with
That's
3
right.
seconds to go in the game, down 3-1. And so, you know, now you're 4-1 and you have to kill off another penalty. And then you come back and score that shorthanded goal. So, I mean, it really was because like at that point, you know, Drew, to your point, most people are expecting what would have happened last year was, okay, the game is over. Not a great feeling to start your, you know, season off with kind of a poor flat game against a, you know, Eastern team that isn't, well, you know, expected to do much in the East. So it doesn't necessarily state, you know, a lot. And then you can kind of turn things around. And that's what everybody's now talking about. Not like, if you think about it, most people aren't talking about, you know, the first couple of periods. Obviously, the Brian Little injury was
solves everything. You're right. They played lousy, and nobody's talking about it because they end up winning the game that they really had no business winning based on their performance.
Right. And at the end of the day, you can say that all that matters is they won the game, but that it really isn't the case. You can believe that Paul Maurice, Charlie Huddy, the entire coaching staff isn't going to like the way they played. You know, as Dave said, in the first 45 minutes of that game, they looked lost. They were having trouble breaking out of their own zone.
Power play looked like the power play of old, which is not a compliment
right.
by any stretch of the imagination.
But having said that, Patrick Laine gets the power play goal in the third period, and it kind of erases all of that, right? So you have some concerns when it comes to the way the Jets played in the defensive zone, guys. But, you know, moving ahead to tonight, and we're going to talk more about the Minnesota Wild throughout the show, the Minnesota Wild are a much better defensive team than the Carolina Hurricanes. The Carolina Hurricanes have got better. You know, you got to like
the way... Well, the Carolina Hurricanes generally play a pretty structured game under Bill Peters. So that's why it was so surprising to sort of see them fall apart. Now, Minnesota Wild under Bruce Boudreau, we know that Boudreau's Anaheim teams always were close to the top in the NHL in terms of goals against on a yearly basis. They were always one of the teams that gave up the fewest goals against.
What I'm saying, though, more so, Drew, is Carolina doesn't have a Ryan Suter,
Fair
right?
Enough.
And Justin Falk, you could see at times, Justin Falk, you know,
he's offensively inclined,
right.
less so than in his own zone.
You know, you wouldn't mistake him for one of the top defensive defensemen in the NHL like Ryan Suter, right? So you've got Ryan Suter and Jonas Brodin and Marco Scandella and, you know, a really good defense there for the Minnesota Wild. Christian Follin will be in the lineup tonight for Mike Riley. But needless to say, it's a better defensive group than the Carolina Hurricanes. But you're right. You got to give Bill Peters and his coaching staff a lot of credit for turning the ship around, because 3 or 4 years ago, the Carolina Hurricanes were a lot easier to play against.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Carolina Hurricanes aren't an easy team to play against. You got to earn those 2 points, but you know, playing a team like the Minnesota Wild, the Jets have got to be better in their own zone, and I think they have to set a tone for the rest of the season. You know, you mentioned the way the Jets played when they were coming from behind. They were also just awful in their own division. The Jets were well below 500 playing teams against the Central Division. Not the Wild, though. They actually beat the Wild 4 times last year, but certainly against other teams like Chicago and Dallas, they struggled a lot. So this is a big game for the Jets tonight. They got to follow up. They have to keep the momentum going, Drew, from Thursday night's game.
Every divisional game, to your point there, Ezzie, every divisional game has heightened importance given the way the NHL, you know, distributes playoff positions, you know, with, you know, the emphasis on the in-division play. And we'll talk much more about the Wild throughout the course of the program. We're going to be joined by Dane Mizutani of the St. Paul Pioneer Press coming up in about 20 minutes' time to talk about the game. I can't gloss over the loss of Brian Little. Out indefinitely, with what looked like a knee injury, just referred to as a lower body injury. I'm not a doctor, but if I had to guess, I would say the fact it didn't require surgery tells me it's probably a sprain to his MCL region, something along those lines. We expect to see him on a – he's going to be out for a week-to-week basis. Brian Little is the Jets' most veteran center. You can argue whether Mark Scheifele has overtaken him on the center depth chart.
Oh, Scheifele definitely has overtaken him.
He has. But Brian Little was still a key contributor, and the Jets were going to rely a lot on Brian Little this season. Now the team, without Little for the next who knows how many weeks and or months, it's a significant, significant loss early in the first game of the season. Brian Little going out after that knee-on-knee hit, an innocent play against Brian Bickle of the Carolina Hurricanes.
You can't understate what the loss of Brian Little will do to this lineup. I mean, sure, the Jets have better center depth than they probably ever had, you know, and you'll have like a guy like, you know, Burmistrov is going to come in and try and do what Little does. And then you're going to have, you know, you obviously have guys on the Moose who can play center, you know, and Andrew Kopp or Nick Batan, but the fact of the matter is that you really, you know, can't really account for that. Especially, like, here's what Paul Maurice said yesterday. He said that you're losing your most experienced center iceman, strongest right-handed D-man, guy who can play on the power play and the penalty kill. So there isn't an area that the Jets don't use Brian Little in, and he's so valuable to this team. And you know, the players, I mean, even Blake Wheeler spoke about it today in his pregame comments after the skate in St. Paul, and he was talking about what, you know, Brian Little brings to this Jets squad. So, I mean, that's going to be, especially, he used the word in his press conference yesterday, indefinite. He didn't give a timeline. He said it'll be weeks probably before. And that's the funny thing. If you ever watch Paul Maurice or you listen to Paul Maurice in these scrums, when he doesn't give you sort of a timeline, that means when he says weeks, that means generally that's when he's going to bring it up again.
Sure. That could be a month.
Could be a while. So, I mean, I'm not gonna be an MD like Drew was and start analyzing where exactly it was. But I can tell you right now that it most likely isn't a good sign when Paul Maurice says you've got at least a few weeks, probably before he wants the media
to even ask about it
again. So I'm guessing, you know, like I said, we're at the probably around the end of October when we'll start asking him again, you know, what's the status of Brian Little, or he'll volunteer something. But generally, it'll be brought up by a member of the media. And then, you know, then we'll get a prognosis saying, oh, he's, you know, going to be now day to day, or more likely he's
X number of weeks away.
Yeah. So my guess is, to be honest with you, I think it's a long-term situation with Brian Little, unfortunately for Jets fans, and I think that's going to have significant ramifications.
The Jets aren't very good in the faceoff dot, and Brian Little is the best of the Jets centermen in the faceoff dot. He's the only guy last year who would take regular faceoffs and finish above 50% in the faceoff dot. I think I don't remember off the top of my head, but I think they lost about two-thirds of the faceoffs on Thursday night against the Carolina Hurricanes.
Right, true, and you know, just to cut in, who is one of the best faceoff guys in the NHL? Mikko Koivu.
Sure.
So when you're talking about who's going to go up against Mikko Koivu, it's quite possible it's Alexander Burmistrov, who spent quite a bit of time on the wing as far as the Jets go. But, mm-hmm. you know, Burmistrov looks like he's going to replace Little on that second line. Matthew Perreault is going to continue to center that third line. So I think that is something to note. I mean, these line combinations, though, you know, Paul Maurice even admitted this yesterday, that, you know, these line combinations are not set in stone. And you could see Patrick Laine on the first line. You could see him on the third line. You could see Kyle Connor on the first line. You could see him on the third line. Same goes for guys like Nikolai Ehlers and Drew Stafford. Center is a very important position, so that's not a position that you like to see too much change.
Right.
Brian Little's been the number one center for the Jets for 5 years, and now Mark Scheifele is centering that top line. Certainly they're going to miss him, but I don't think it necessarily means that, you know, the Jets can't beat teams, because Alexander Burmistrov is a good two-way center as well. You know, I've definitely criticized him sometimes the way he's played, but, you know, the Jets are going to have to, they're going to have to pick up the slack for Little.
It's a golden opportunity for Alex Burmistrov, and when we come back after the break, we'll talk about that opportunity. We'll go through the Jets forward lines as they skated during the pregame skate. Much more on the Jets and the Wild. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. 20 minutes past the top of the hour. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Still to join us on today's program, former Winnipeg Jets player Mike Eagles, coming up in hour number two. In about
Number 36.
The Eagle has landed. In about 70 minutes, he's going to land here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Of course, Mike will be in town for next week's alumni game and ancillary events, of course. So we'll be thrilled to talk to Mike Eagles coming up in about 70 minutes' time. Stay tuned for that. This segment of the show brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center and Dr. Les Rikus, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. I had the opportunity to run into Les a couple times over the last couple weeks celebrating the Jewish high holidays. How did your fast go for you guys? Good fast on Yom Kippur for both you guys? A lot of repenting for bad deeds done over the past 12 months?
Well, I wasn't invited to the Mindell's breakfast.
Ezzy, you are always invited to the Mindell House. It's a open-ended invitation for you to attend the Mindell household.
Right, and for our non-Jewish listeners, the breakfast is after the day where you fast. And I'll have you know, Drew, that I fasted the entire day.
Attaboy.
And that's really tough for me because I usually eat about 12 times a day. So
there you go. You really cut down your calorie intake that day.
For a guy like me who's pushing 230 pounds, fasting is not as easy as you would think, but I have a lot to repent for as well. So it was actually fantastic.
You feel spiritually lifted since then?
Yes, I had a nice meal at Naomi's mom's house. It was lovely. Again, shout out to Shelley, always giving her the shout out on the high holidays.
Yes, naturally.
So it was great, and I hope you guys had a nice holiday too.
Indeed, we did. And anyways, let's get to the Jets and the Wild tonight in St. Paul, a game, of course, you can hear live on TSN 1290. The Jets forward lines.
Yep.
Available currently on illegalcurve.com if I read them too quickly for you. But this is all after the shuffling of the lines with the Brian Little injury and everything else. Patrick Laine on the left side, Mark Scheifele in the middle, Blake Wheeler on the right side. So Ehlers moves off of that line. Your quote-unquote second line, although you don't really need to quantify them. Sean Matthias on the left side, Alex Burmistrov up the middle, Nikolai Ehlers on the right side. Your third line, Kyle Connor on the left, Matthew Perreault on the right. In the center, and Drew Stafford on the right. And then your fourth line, this is a change in the lineup here, Brandon Tanev on the left, Adam Lowry in the center, Joel Armia, who had a good game on Thursday night, out of the lineup, Chris Thorburn in the lineup instead.
Yeah, it's nice to see Thorbs get into the lineup. Unfortunately for Joel Armia, I agree with you, Drew. I thought he was pretty good in the first game, and I thought Armia was very good in the preseason as well. So the biggest difference here is that Patrick Laine is on the top line now, and he finished the opening game against the Carolina Hurricanes on the top line, and we know how that went. He had a goal and an assist there in the third period. And probably the biggest difference is that Nikolai Ehlers, Dave, is now on the second line, and he's playing the right side.
Sure.
As opposed to the left side, which he's played his entire NHL career to date on the left side, most recently with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler on that top line. So there's some changes there, and I wouldn't read too much into these lines because when Brian Little is healthy and in the lineup, that might be a month from now, could be longer than that. He's going to be the second line center. So I'm a little bit surprised, Drew, that Alexander Burmistrov is centering that second line. I thought maybe they would move Matthew Perreault up to the second line and then have Burmistrov centering that third line.
But the truth is, between the you can call him 2A and 2B. There really is no difference there necessarily.
Right.
What you saw from the Jets, and I thought, is you saw the improved depth on Thursday night. The depth that you could roll out, or that Paul Maurice could roll out most any line, and they would see some action in the offensive zone. Something where, in previous years, the fourth line or the third line just haven't had the offensive capabilities that they have now. This Jets team, for all its warts on the defensive side of the game, and there were plenty on Thursday, and I'd be surprised if those warts went away quickly, are going to be a very entertaining offensive team just by the talent they're deploying on a night-in, night-out basis. This is a talented offensive team that is likely going to give it back on the defensive side of the game.
Yeah, I think if you look at what Maurice did, he's basically, like you said, Drew, he's gone a 2A, 2B sort of situation. I don't think he's particularly concerned but with what we call his lines, and he said that as much. He said as much in his scrums with us. If you look, he's kind of trying to balance having Ehlers, we think of Ehlers now, he's kind of an old hat to us.
Second year.
But the reality is he's only in his second year. So, you've got a young guy who's got a ton of speed on your second line. You've also got another young guy in Kyle Connor who's got a ton of speed, great vision on your like I said, third line as we're calling it, but realistically, who cares? And then you've got a couple of veterans in Stafford and Matthias who can kind of do some similar things. And then you've got two centers who are facilitators. I mean, Burmistrov's a bit more of a shooter. Perreault, I mean, really had his lowest goal total in a couple of years last year. So we'll see if he starts shooting more. He actually had a shot in, I think it was either the third period or overtime, that was like, actually, it almost took me by surprise, which was funny because I think of Perreault now as such a facilitator and such a passer that when he takes a shot, it's almost, it was deceptive. Like, I was like, wow, who took that? And then I looked, I was like, wow, it was Perreault.
Well, because last year, of course, he had the lowest goal total, as you mentioned, with only 9 goals. After the two years previous, he had 18 goals back-to-back. We'll talk about Matthew Perreault during the Jets over-under segment coming up a little bit later on in the show, because that's one of the questions in Jets over-under. And again, his 32 assists that he had last year were a career high in assists. So it did sort of flip the conventional wisdom about Matthew Perreault a little bit on its head.
Yeah, and, you know, guys, the key matchup tonight, and Ken Wiebe talked about this in today's Winnipeg Sun, the key matchup is the Scheifele line versus the Eric Staal line. So you've got Zach Parise, Eric Staal, and then they've got Charlie Coyle playing on that top line. Charlie Coyle had a goal in the Wild's opening 3-2 loss to the St. Louis Blues. But what worries me a little bit, I'm not worried about Matthew Perreault and Drew Stafford there on that third line. I'm worried about the Alexander Burmistrov, Sean Mathias, Nikolai Ehlers line going up against that Mikko Koivu line. They've got Mikael Granlund and Chris Stewart on that line. That's what I'm concerned about because, as we mentioned, you know, the Minnesota Wild, they're a good face-off team. They're a very tough team to play against. They're going to be more offensive-minded this year, and maybe we didn't see that in the opening game against the St. Louis Blues, but as you guys know, the St. Louis Blues are one of the top defensive teams in the NHL, but I would expect that to be another one of those key lines. Alexander Burmistrov doesn't play game one, and he's thrown right into the fire, centering that second line with Mathias and Ehlers, so he's going to go right up against the Mikko Koivu line, guys, and to me, that's going to be another one of those key matchups for the Jets.
Another change to the Jets lineup for tonight's game. Josh Morrissey stays with Dustin Byfuglien, no surprise there, of course. Toby Enstrom with Tyler Myers. And then there's a change on the third Jets pairing. Mark Stewart gets his first game of the season after being a healthy scratch on Thursday night. He's going to be paired up with Paul Postma. So you see Ben Chiarot come out of the lineup. Mark Stewart get an opportunity on the third pairing left side with Paul Postma. And we'll talk about the Jets defense and the bottom pairing in more detail a little bit later on in the show. But, you know, when asked about the changes, specifically the Thorburn for Armia and Stewart for Chiarot, you know, Paul Maurice said, you know, these guys need to get a game in early on in the year. Don't read too much into it. This is sort of it's still early on in the season that you don't want a veteran guy or you don't want any players sort of sitting in the press box
right,
and rotting, for lack of a better word, early on in the year. Within the first couple weeks, you always want to make sure your guys get their legs under them. Michael Hutchinson, to that point, gets the start in goal for the Jets. Connor Hellebuck went Thursday. Michael Hutchinson gets his opportunity to make his first start of the season for the Winnipeg Jets.
Right, Drew, and Michael Hutchinson didn't play well in his last preseason game, if you remember, against the Minnesota Wild, so it's a nice opportunity for him to go into Minnesota and try to have a better game. As far as the defensemen go, we know that guys like Mark Stewart, Ben Chiarot, Brian Strait, when he's up with the Jets, these guys are going to compete for that third pair. Right now, we don't know what that third pair is going to look like. We thought that it was a possibility that Josh Morrissey was going to start the season on the third pair, but you know the Jets, and you got to give Paul Maurice and Charlie Huddy credit, they've thrown Josh Morrissey right onto that top pair.
No other option with Jacob Trouba off doing whatever Jacob Trouba's doing.
Well, you know, I said last week, Drew, that, you know, getting paired up with Tyler Myers might be a better pairing, and then put Enstrom with Byfuglien because Enstrom and Byfuglien have that familiarity with each other going back to the first year in the Jets. But it looks like they're going to go with Morrissey and Byfuglien for the time being. I don't know if that's going to stay like that, but so it's nice to see Mark Stewart get into the action. And as you said, I don't think that they want to necessarily have their defensemen, you know, sitting in the press box for extended periods of time. I didn't think Ben Chiarot played that well in the opening game, and I didn't think Ben Chiarot had a very good preseason. I'm a big fan of Ben Chiarot. I think he can be better. And I think when he was paired up with Dustin Byfuglien a couple of years ago, was the best hockey that he played.
That rookie year for Chiarot, yes, where he sort of came out of nowhere. Nobody had any sort of expectations whatsoever for him. And he emerged as that year, the Jets, the playoff year, sort of emerged as a stabilizing force, or he filled a gap for the Jets on the back end of the defense.
So whoever plays the best between Ben Chiarot, Mark Stewart, Paul Postma, whether it's a Brian Strait, a Julian Melchiori, that's the defenseman that's going to play full-time and earn that job. Now, as far as it goes, I mean, it's anybody's job to win, I would say.
And we'll talk, like I said, more about the Jets' defense coming up in the second hour of the show. Let's go to break when we come back. Dane Mizutani joins us from the St. Paul Pioneer Press. He covers the Minnesota Wild, tonight's Jets opponent. We'll talk to Dane next about the team from Minnesota. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mundell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Dane Mizutani. Dane covers the Minnesota Wild for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Dane, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Excited to get going.
Our pleasure, Dane. Yeah, it's going to be a good Central Division matchup later on this evening in St. Paul as the Jets and the Wild renew their rivalry for yet another season here. Going to be a, you know, you look at the Central Division, and we know it's the toughest division in hockey. And you look at the Jets and the Wild, and both of these teams have designs on being playoff teams. You know, I think it's, you know, and Bruce Boudreau sort of alluded to it, I believe, in his pregame comments today that, you know, these games between the Jets and the Wild have extra importance on them, because you can certainly make the argument that only one of these two teams are going to be playoff bound when the season ends come in April.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he joked about it, playoff hockey in October. These are must-win games, and as crazy as that sounds, in Game 2, these five games that they play, like you said, are going to maybe determine which one of these teams makes the playoffs. I don't think anyone's expecting these teams to finish in the first or second place in the conference, so they're probably going to be fighting for a playoff spot come the end of the season, and that's why these games against each other are so big.
Dane, Thursday night was Eric Staal's first regular season game as a member of the Minnesota Wild. He was paired up with Zach Parise and Charlie Coyle there on the top line. How did you think Eric Staal played, and do you think he's going to stay as the number one center, or do you think they're going to promote Mikko Koivu at some point in the season, as he's been really the number one center for the Wild for some time now?
Sure. Yeah, I thought Eric looked pretty good. That line as a whole, it's going to be the line they lean on this year. I'd be shocked if Staal isn't the first-line center. Pretty much throughout the season. It seems like that's what Boudreau wants to happen, playing next to Parise and Coyle. But Staal looked pretty good in game one. He had a breakaway that he probably should have cashed in, questionable if it was a hook or not. But I think you're seeing the chemistry, and that chemistry is going to continue to build as the season progresses. And just it's something where I think if anyone wants to hit the panic button and say, well, that line didn't score in game one, that'd be wrong, because they just need some time to kind of gel, to mesh. But, yeah, I think Eric is going to be the number one center there for at least this season. We'll see what happens, but it sounds like that's what Boudreau wants.
Dane, in the Pioneer Press, you wrote an article entitled, "Was signing Zach Parise and Ryan Sutter money well spent?" So the question is, was it?
I think it was. I mean, there were a lot of comments in there and just certain guys, but I mean, they did what they had to do. They got two franchise guys, and it sounds cliche, and yes, two players don't win Stanley Cups, but at the time, that's a move that they make 100 times out of 100. That was the two best players in the free agent class, and you know, say what you want about now they're tied to them forever, but basically forever. I think you go back, and they've made the playoffs 4 years in a row, and maybe they don't have that legit sniper on the team right now. But I think you got to look beyond that. These guys have brought kind of something to the franchise that it wasn't necessarily there before they got here. So it's still going to play out. I mean, you still need some of these young guys, these guys like Charlie Coyle, these guys like Granlund, these guys like Jason Zucker, to show up for the season to be successful. But I think to put it all on Parise and Suter and say, you know, they weren't worth the money would be wrong.
Dane Mizutani is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Dane covers the Minnesota Wild for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Dane, you mentioned Mikael Granlin. You mentioned Jason Zucker. You know, these are the young guys on the Minnesota Wild. And year after year, this Wild team has been led by their veterans. You know, Parisi, you know, Eric Staal, who they just obviously bring in, Mikko Koivu, you know, Jason Pominville. When and sort of year after year, we're waiting for sort of the shift to take place where the younger players, the Granlins, the Zuckers, the Niederreiters, sort of take over and take that step where this becomes their team and the veteran guys sort of take a step back. When is that going to happen for the Minnesota Wild? And if it hasn't happened yet, is there reason to believe that it's never going to happen?
You know, it has to happen this year, I think. A lot of these guys are 24, 25. And I think this season in particular, you know what you're going to get out of Parisi and Suter if they're healthy, out of Koivu, out of Dubnyk and Gaul. You don't necessarily know what you're going to get out of guys like Charlie Coyle, guys like Mikael Granlin, guys like Jason Zucker, like you said. And they need to take that next step. This season, if it's going to be successful, I think is going to hinge more on those younger guys taking the next step. There is reason for worry, I guess. Some of these guys are in their fifth year and then in the league. And sometimes you are what you are at that point. But at the same time, you look at it, a lot of these guys came in early. They're only 24. It's right around the time where people break out. So I think now is the year. And if it's not now, then I'm not sure when it is.
Dane, the Minnesota Wild about 5 days ago claimed Teemu Pulkkinen off of waivers from the Detroit Red Wings. Jets fans will certainly remember him as a member of the Detroit Red Wings. He's only 24 years old. He was playing on the fourth line in the opening night game against the St. Louis Blues. He'll be in the lineup again tonight versus the Winnipeg Jets. What are they expecting out of Pulkkinen? Do they expect him to be a third or fourth line guy, or do they have higher expectations for him?
It sounds like they do have higher expectations for him. He seemed to kind of flame out in Detroit, and he seemed like he was happy for the change of scenery, just talking to him in St. Louis. Like you said, guy 24 years old, everyone talks about his shot. He has a great one. He may not necessarily be fast with his own, but his shot is something that people recognize, people notice. Boudreau alluded to it the first day. And he said, obviously, you know, this kid isn't going to just come in and know my system. So that's why you're seeing him on the fourth line right now, the energy line, as Boudreau calls it, where he doesn't necessarily have to know all the ins and outs, all the idiosyncrasies of the system. He can just go out there and play hockey. But I think over time you will see him kind of bump up. Boudreau said, you know, anyone can bump up or down, and obviously that's coach speak. But I think it makes sense to play this guy. If he latches on, if he shows that what he's got with the Finns on the second line. I mean, Boudreau likes Mikko Koivu and Granlin together. He's been searching for that right winger this pretty much throughout camp, throughout the preseason. In game one, he had Pominville up there. It sounds like Chris Stewart's going to be up there tonight. He's searching for that fit on that second line. And I think if Pulkkinen shows that he can grasp the system, that he can play the style that he wants to play. It seems like a pretty natural fit up there with three Finns on your second line. Now, that's just speculation on my part, but it makes sense to think that. And I'm like, he's 24 years old and has a lot of potential, and that's why they took a shot on him.
In the Minnesota Wild, speaking of expectations, have made the conference finals once in their franchise history. Are the fans getting ready for this team? Like, are they ready for this team to take that next step and already challenge for a playoff, you know, the finals, essentially?
Sure, I think everyone's ready for it. I think that's probably across fan bases. No one likes to kind of be in that purgatory where you're good enough to make the playoffs, but not necessarily good enough to win it all. But hockey's a funny game. We all know it. You get to the playoffs, and you can just get hot. If Dubnyk gets hot, he could presumably carry it into the Cup. So getting to the playoffs is half the battle. But talked to Zach Parise the other day, and he said, you know, we are ready to take that next step. And Suter said the same thing. And obviously that you want them to hear that. You want to hear that from the guys. You hope it's not lip service. I think the fans are ready to see it. I know the fans are ready to see it. They're kind of sick of watching this team, you know, get to the second round and lose to the Blackhawks or get knocked out in the first round by the Stars. So it'll be an interesting year. I mean, wouldn't be a Wild season if they are kind of not battling for a playoff spot towards the end of the year. So we'll see what Boudreau has in store for these guys. Obviously, he's his record in the regular season speaks for himself. 200 wins with two teams, mm-hmm. four, fastest coach ever to 400. Always seems to get his guys to play well in the regular season. Say what you want about the Game 7s. The Wild would love for a Game 7 right now. So we'll see. I think Boudreaux is going to be good for them, and I think they could surprise a couple of people this year.
Dane Mizutani is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dane covers the Minnesota Wild for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Dane, one of the late scratches, pardon me, the late cuts from training camp for the Minnesota Wild was Joel Eriksson-Ek, first-round pick last year, 20th overall. You know, for a team that's always searching for offense, we know the Minnesota Wild traditionally have been a very good defensive team, a very responsible defensive team. Bruce Boudreaux certainly preaches defense first when it comes to his coaching style. How tempted or how close was Joel Eriksson-Ek to making this team and maybe providing an offensive boost for a team that finished 20th overall, or pardon me, 19th overall in goals for last season?
He was close, and I don't think we've seen the last of him. From what I'm hearing, it was an issue with immigration papers. Basically, the 19-year-old kid can't earn a contract until he gets, I think it's a P1 stamp up in Ontario or something. Lots of ins and outs, lots of jargon. With these immigration papers. But as soon as that stuff is ironed out, I think you will see him in the NHL, at least for a stint. They can play the kid 9 games without burning the first year of his contract, and they want to do that. So we'll see. He might come in, be so valuable that they can't send him back to Sweden, that he's just, you know, we have to keep him up. He was one of the more impressive players towards down the stretch in the preseason, and I know that's the preseason, but it's also a 19-year-old playing with grown men and holding his own and then some. So, I don't think you've seen the last of Joel Eriksson-Ek. I think he'll be up as soon as that paperwork is figured out, and he'll be fighting to stay in the NHL for good.
Dan, nine it looks games, like... go ahead.
No, I just said 9 games is as many as they can play him without burning it, but Chuck Fletcher said they wouldn't be opposed to burning the first year of his contract if he looks like a legitimate player that should be up for 82.
Dan, it looks like Christian Folland is going to make his season debut tonight on defense, replacing Mike Riley. Is Bruce Boudreaux putting Christian Folland in the lineup because he wants his physicality against a more physical Jets team tonight?
Yeah, I think so. And those two guys were battling for spots throughout camp. So I think you'll see kind of spot starts until someone takes a hold of it for good. Riley was a little shaky in game one against the Blues, and had he been outstanding, maybe he would still be in the lineup. Something where he's going to continue, Boudreaux is going to continue to shuffle him until someone jumps out. But talking to him today, it makes sense. There's more than a 6'4 guy against Jets team that everyone knows is physical. Bolin said he takes pride, and then obviously being that big guy on the back line, the Wild don't have many of them. A lot of their blue line strength is predicated on breaking the puck out, using their speed to their advantage. Folland kind of is a little different than most of those guys on the blue line. So it makes sense to play him now. And Boudreaux was plain and simple and said, you know, we're not looking for him to fight. We're just looking for him to take the body. And at 6'4", he's bigger than anyone else the Wild have back there. It just makes sense tonight.
Dane, we'll let you go on this last question. Of course, we've talked about him throughout the course of the interview. That's Bruce Boudreaux. He's the Wild's new head coach, his first season in Minnesota. You know, he's certainly one of the preeminent regular season coaches. His playoff struggles have been well documented as well. But forgetting about that, you know, is Bruce Boudreaux the right coach to keep this Minnesota Wild team in the playoff contention? This seemed like, to me, from the outside, before they hired Boudreaux, to be a team, you know, a candidate for a team to drop out of a playoff spot. But Boudreaux's presence, is that going to be worth enough points and usually enough wins to maybe keep this Minnesota Wild team in playoff contention, if not the actual playoffs, than any other hire would have been?
I think so. Like I mentioned earlier, I mean, regular season success speaks for itself. His 400 wins faster than any coach in NHL history. And he does always get the most out of his guys. He's proved it anywhere he's been, even dating back to his days in the AHL. The problem you've seen with the Wild, what it seems like for the last 3, 4, 5 years, is those mid-season flops. And I think that's something that maybe Boudreaux can help them fight through a little harder. I think it was 13 out of 14 last year, and somehow made the playoffs with Torchetti coming in after they fired Yo. I don't think you'll see slumps like that. I think Boudreau will get the most out of his guys at all times. They seem to gravitate towards him right away. Talking to Charlie Coyle early in camp, he just said, you know, it seems like he actually wants to get to know me, and I know that sounds cliche, blah, 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 but it seems like him kind of taking some time to get to know guys on a personal level, what makes them tick, really hits home with especially some of these younger guys who Yo was their only coach. So they're a little adverse to change maybe, but when the 61-year-old veteran coach comes in and really wants to get to know you as a young guy, I think that strikes a chord. So, to be long-winded and answer your question, I think he is the right guy for this team, and I think we'll see it as the season progresses.
Dane Mizutani covers the Minnesota Wild for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. The Jets in the Wild, puck drop in about 5 hours and 15 minutes time from now. Dane, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. Appreciate your insight.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Looking forward to talking again soon.
We'll do it again soon. Take care, Dane. When we come back, we'll discuss the Winnipeg Jets. They got four rookies in their lineup. What will the impact of those rookies be when it comes to a playoff spot? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Save made. 5 seconds to go. You can get on your feet back home and bring this one home. A Black Friday is a sunny Friday. The Winnipeg Jets hang on and win in St. Paul, Minnesota, 3-1, beating the Wild here this afternoon. How about that?
That, of course, Paul Edmonds with the call last year, the Jets and the Wild. That was Connor Hellebuck's first career NHL game, his first career win. Not going to be in the net. The backup goaltender in tonight's contest between the Jets and the Wild, Michael Hutchinson, gets the start in net. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 10 minutes before the top of the hour here on TSN 1290. And this segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Gentlemen, the Winnipeg Jets, we saw on Thursday night, are going to be a fun offensive team this year. Their defensive shortcomings are going to be many. At least that's my guess as to how the season is going to progress, is that they're not going to be a very good defensive team. And that's not really shocking, given that defense usually takes time to learn, especially when you have a roster that has four rookies on it. You know, Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor, Brandon Tanev, Josh Morrissey, all rookies. Many other young guys, of course, in that Nikolai Ehlers only in his second season. Connor Hellebuck, basically a rookie, but not quite, as he played he played 26 games last year.
Drew, I just wanted to say I would probably put Brandon Tanev maybe not in that group just because he played a full career in college and he's 24, but sure. He is an NHL rookie.
An NHL rookie, but a little bit older in the, you know, in I guess in terms of the actual age on his birth certificate. You know, they say that there's an old expression that for every rookie you start, I think it's a football expression, for every rookie you start at a position, you lose one game. Obviously, it's not, there's no direct correlation to the hockey world. But do you think the Jets and this youth movement they're clearly on with these young players in the lineup and these rookies in terms of NHL experience, do you think that ultimately is going to be the growing pains these young players are going to go through is going to ultimately be, or could ultimately be, an Achilles heel for this team that's too much to overcome when it comes to playoff positioning this season?
Well, I guess anything could happen, right, guys? I mean, if Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor aren't consistent contributors to this team, and that goes for Josh Morrissey as well, if he's not playing 15 to 18 minutes a night and he's not able to perform in the role that the Jets want him to perform in, then yes, it could be the Achilles heel of this team. But let's be honest, guys, the Winnipeg Jets were very young last year too. It's not like the Winnipeg Jets were a veteran team last year. They had Nikolai Ehlers and they had Andrew Kopp in the lineup. Connor Hellebuck played 26 games for them last year. When you're talking about Michael Hutchinson, it's not like he's 35 years old either. He's relatively young. He played quite a bit for the Winnipeg Jets last year. So the Jets were one of the youngest teams in the league last year. I think they were the fourth or fifth youngest, and I think they're still the fourth or fifth youngest, if I'm not mistaken. I think they were 0.2 years older than the Carolina Hurricanes. But needless to say, I mean, you look around the league, guys, the Toronto Maple Leafs started six rookies in their opening game against the Ottawa Senators. The entire league is young. If you look at a team like the Chicago Blackhawks, who's considered to be more of a veteran team, you've got guys like Ryan Hartman and Tyler Motte in the lineup. Gustav Forsling's another guy that made the team. So every team in the NHL has rookies on it, right? I mean, the NHL, guys, is getting younger and younger, it seems like, every year. But back to your question, Drew, about the Jets. I mean, yes, I think that if Laine and Connor go through prolonged slumps, and they will. I mean, it depends if we're talking about 5 games or 10 games. If you guys remember, Nikolaj Ehlers, you know, came out and started the season, you know, like gangbusters, and he was contributing, he was getting on the score sheet. But in the middle part of that season, I'd say, you know, towards the end of November to January, Ehlers struggled.
That's right. He sort of got his legs under him right at the start of the new year last year.
And the end. I mean, when he was on the line with Scheifele and Wheeler,
right,
that's when that line was the best line in all of hockey.
From January 2nd on is when he did the majority of his damage offensively.
Right.
Before that, he was going through, you know, he started off well. And it seems that, you know, same thing happened with Mark Scheifele in his rookie year. You know, they hit this rookie wall. There just does seem to be an adjustment period where, you know, the adrenaline or whatever it is for the first 10 or 12 games can keep a rookie going. And then they hit this wall where they realize that the things they did in junior, they have to adapt their game to some extent to make it more amenable to the NHL. And it does take seemingly a month or 6 weeks to allow that to happen.
And Dave, that might be partly why you see veterans like Mark Stewart and Chris Thorburn going into the lineup tonight. It might just be one game, but I think that the Jets are going to have to make sure that they have a good mix of rookies and older veteran players in the lineup. And I mean, you know, a guy like Sean Matthias, you can't, you know, really, you know, understate the impact he's going to have on this team. They signed him. He was the only big free agent that they signed. He's a guy that can play wing and center, whether it's on the second or third line. I mean, I think they've got enough veterans on this team. It's not an entirely young team. I mean, sure, the average age is, you know, just under 25 years old or whatever it is.
Average age for the Winnipeg Jets is actually 26.4 years old. They are the fifth youngest team. Only teams younger than the Jets, the Toronto Maple Leafs, you mentioned, that are 25.7 years old.
Gets younger without Brian Little in the lineup.
It certainly does. The Edmonton Oilers are 25.8. Columbus Blue Jackets, 25.5. Carolina Hurricanes, 25.9. And the Buffalo Sabres, 26.2. So the Jets certainly in the bottom third of the NHL in terms of youth on their roster.
You know what? I don't think it's a impediment necessarily. I mean, look what we saw, what happened with youth in the third period of that game. I mean, obviously Blake Wheeler was the one who kind of spurred the comeback, but I mean, you had, you know, all those guys. Kyle Connor played a major role. Patrick Laine played a major role. Scheifele, obviously, who's, you know, I mean, again, we think of him as an old guy, but he's still, you know, a fairly young player
just
in this league.
Just turning 24 this year, will be.
The other thing we have to take into account is this is the greatest hockey league in the world, and these are the greatest hockey players in the world. So, I mean, these players, I mean, regardless of what you've done, look, I watched a lot of Kyle Connor play in Michigan last year, and he was unbelievable. But he was unbelievable in college. And college is good, don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking college, but you're not up against NHL players. So there is a obvious adjustment period. And again, you know, we do live in an instant gratification society. So if a player like Patrick Laine doesn't score 4 goals in his, you know, preseason, then suddenly it's Panic at the Disco. And I don't know that that's necessarily, you know, makes a lot of sense, because, look, we saw it in game one of the season for the Jets. Patrick Laine was kind of feeling his way out, you know, I mean, he was getting his legs under him. By the third period, you look pretty good.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, I think Dave makes a good point. It's really how the young players deal with adversity. Like, if Nikolaj Ehlers starts the first 10 games of the season and he only has 2 or 3 points, how does he deal with that adversity if he experiences the dreaded sophomore slump, right? So I think, you know, that's a very good point. Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor were the best players on their team in the previous level that they played at, right? Kyle Connor, you know, on that line with Tyler Motte was absolutely excellent. JT Compher was the other guy. He lit up the NCAA last year. I think there's no question that he's ready for the NHL level. And we talked about this. I mean, these guys aren't going to score 90 points each in the NHL. Josh Morrissey's not going to score 45 points as a defenseman and play 25 minutes a game. I mean, they're going to watch his minutes. You know, he's not going to play as much on the power play in his rookie year. But I think it really has to deal with how these guys deal with adversity. And you have a lot of veteran guys on this team that can guide them, guys like Blake Wheeler, guys like Matthew Perreault, Drew Stafford, whether it's on defense, guys like Tyler Myers and Dustin Byfuglien. I think the Jets have a great leadership group. So I'm not too worried that the Jets have gone too young here.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at our Winnipeg Jets over-under for the upcoming 2016 season. We do this every year right around this time. It's always a fun segment where we'll discuss the Winnipeg Jets over-under. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, and Ezra Ginsberg with you.
Where's Alex Trebek?
Alex Trebek is taking the form of Drew Mandel as we do the Winnipeg Jets over-under for the upcoming 2016-17 season.
Okay, I get to be Turd Ferguson, though.
You are the 100%, you are the Turd Ferguson of this room.
Okay, good.
There's no doubt about that. So here we go with the Winnipeg Jets over-under for the upcoming year. Prior to last season, when he scored 78 points, Jets captain Blake Wheeler had never had more than 69 points in an NHL season. Blake Wheeler will have over or under 75.5 points this season.
I've thought long and hard about this, Drew. I think Blake Wheeler will have over 75.5 points. I think he has 80 points this year.
I also, considering he got two in his first game, so we know he's on pace for like 164 points. I mean, the guy's going to be unbelievable. I think he's going to go over. I think his line will gel, and I think that he's probably going to finish around 79, 80 points this year.
Yeah, it's first year as a captain. I think he's going to be a little extra motivated.
There's a lot of pressure on him, but I've got him over.
Question number two for the Winnipeg Jets over under. In the final 26 games of last season, Mark Scheifele led all players in the NHL with 34 points, an average of 1.31 points per game. In his first 45 games of last season, Mark Scheifele scored 27 points, an average of 0.6 points per game. This year, Mark Scheifele will average over or under 0.9 points per game, which would equal 73.8 points in an 82-game season. Basically, the question is, do you think Mark Scheifele will be over or under 74 points per game?
Yeah, I'm going to go even.
You can't go even.
Well, I think he'll be right around 75 points, so I guess I'll say over. But why can't I go even?
There's no even. You're not allowed.
There's no pushing.
There's no pushing. The actual question was over or under 0.9 points per game.
And since you can't actually get 0.9,
right,
you have to go
so
over.
So I'll say over. Okay. I don't think Scheifele's going to hit 80 points like Blake Wheeler, but I do think he'll be over 70 points. So 0.9, I think, works out, like you said, to 74 points. So I think, I'll go over. But I'm not going to go much over.
I think that if I've got Blake Wheeler going over, then I have to go with Mark Scheifele also going over, simply because they will be playing the majority of the season together. And I think that it's now that he's really the number one center on this team, he's going to take that jump to the next level.
Last season, Dustin Byfuglien averaged exactly 2 minutes of shorthanded time on ice per game, the most on an average per game basis in his career. Two of the players who played more in shorthanded situations last season, Jacob Trouba and Mark Stewart, are no longer regular defensemen for the Winnipeg Jets. This year, Dustin Byfuglien will average over or under 2 minutes and 35 seconds per game in shorthanded situations.
Well, I'm going to take a little issue with that because Mark Stewart's playing tonight. I wouldn't say he's not a regular defenseman. He'll probably play less games.
I think it's clear that he's not guaranteed a spot like he was last year.
Sure. Okay, I'll agree with that, Alex.
Thank you. You're welcome, Turd.
So I'm going to say over. And by the way, that's three overs in a row for me, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to play more. As you said, Jacob Trouba isn't going to play as much on penalty goal because he's not going to be playing at all for the Jets. And neither is Mark Stewart. So I'm going to say over. He'll probably be around 3 minutes to 3.5 minutes a game.
This is a tough one because I'm inclined to go under simply because they're going to be using Byfuglien so many times in game situations. So I think that he's going to try and do it by committee, and he's going to use Byfuglien a little less this season. So I think I'm going to go under.
So Dave says he'll play under 2 minutes and 35 seconds per game in shorthanded situations.
Simply because he's going to be playing power play. He's going to be playing the majority of the five-on-five. I just see it being a problematic.
Last year, Matthew Perreault scored 9 goals, the fewest in his career since becoming an NHL regular. The 2 years previous, he scored 18 goals in back-to-back seasons. This year, Matthew Perreault will score over or under 16 goals for the Winnipeg Jets. Let me rephrase the question. Will over or under 15.5 goals for the Winnipeg Jets? That way you can't push. You can't pick tie.
How do you score a half goal, Drew?
Well, you can't. That's the point.
I know. I'm just bugging you. I'm going to go over. I think Matty Perreault scores 20 this year.
Which would be a career high.
Yep.
Fair enough.
The over-under was 9. He's going to go over. I mean,
No. The over-under is 15.5.
Sorry, 15.5. Yeah, I've got him. Oh, that's a tough one. I think he's a facilitator. I think, especially with his line mates, I think he's going to be under.
I think you're a facilitator too, Dave.
I do like to pass it off to my wingers over here.
When it comes to passing the buck, we're all facilitators on this program. Staying with Matthew Perreault, last year he registered 32 assists. Besting his previous career high of 25 assists.
Is this the Matthew Perreault over-under?
These next two questions are. Accomplished in 2013-14 while still a member of the Anaheim Ducks. Matthew Perreault will have over or under 30.5 assists this season.
Ooh. I think that's harder than the previous question. I'm going to say over again if he stays healthy.
Well, that's always the caveat. Yeah, I think this is assuming everybody stays healthy.
I think Matty Perreault is going to have 20 goals and 35 assists this year if he stays healthy.
Certainly would be a career year for Matthew Perreault. Yeah.
Well, he's got the 4-year contract under his belt now with the Jets. He re-signed, so mm-hmm. I'm a big Matty Perreault fan. So, yes, I think it's over.
I'm with Ezzy. This guy, again, he's been a passer. If you look at his career stats, he's always been, heads and tails. His assists have generally doubled his goals. So I'm with Ez on the over on that one.
Well, Dave, especially if he's passing the puck to Patrick Laine on the power play.
Oh, yeah. No, so. There's no question. I think his assists will be over.
You both have him over 30.5 assists. So a lot
five overs in a row.
So clearly what you have is a lot of expectations for Matthew Perreault this
season. I just love over.
This season. You do just love over. Nikolaj Ehlers had a solid rookie season for the Winnipeg Jets last year with 38 points in 73 games played. The majority of his offensive production came after January 1st when he scored 26 points in 35 games played. This year, Nikolaj Ehlers will score over or under 55.5 points.
I'm going to go under. I don't think it's going to be much under. I have Ehlers somewhere between, I would say, 45 and 50 points. So I think he is going to struggle a little bit, especially when he isn't playing on the top line. And think there is going to be parts of this year where he doesn't play on the top line. He's going to be on that second line. So I'm going to go under.
Like tonight, for example.
I'm with Ez on this one. I'm going under. I think that he'll probably finish in that 50-point range. And so I have him under that one.
Since the start of the 2011-12 season, Tyler Myers has never had more than 28 points in an NHL season. Last year, he had 27 points for the Jets in 73 games played. Tyler Myers will have over or under 24.5 points this year.
I'm going to go over, much over on this one. I think especially with Jacob Trouba not in the lineup to start the season, and we don't know how long the Jets are going to be without Jacob Trouba or a replacement for Jacob Trouba in the sense of a trade. I think there is going to be more expectations offensively out of Tyler Myers. So I'm going to go over. I think he gets around 35 points this year.
I'm going under. I think that, that's a tough one, but I'm going to go under on that one. I think that he's more in the secondary role. I think like that you'll have Byfuglien as the primary. He's not even playing power play one. He's in the last practice, he was going in and out of power play two as the defenseman. So I'm going to go under on that one.
Connor Hellebuck started 26 games for the Jets last season. Michael Hutchinson started 25 games, and Andrei Pavlik started 31. This year, Hellebuck and Hutchinson combined will start over or under 78.5 games for the Winnipeg Jets?
You know, that's a good question, Drew. I like that one. Obviously, if the two of them are healthy, I'm going to say over. Put asterisk there. If one of them is injured, Andre Pavlik is going to be called up. So I'm going to say over because I think this will be the tandem for the Jets. I don't think Andre Pavlik has a future with the Winnipeg Jets. I think that's clear by him getting sent down to the Manitoba Moose, him being in the last year of his five-year contract. So I'm going to say over.
Well, since the question presupposes that the person remains healthy the entire season, then
no, it doesn't presuppose that necessarily. If there, this is a
it presupposes.
This is a question about performance. If you think this is a question that could be, you know, if one of them gets injured, obviously the
you're saying in theory they could play poorly and be sent down.
That's
correct.
That's more what the question is about. Is about performance.
Sure.
At any point, do you think the performance dictates that Andre Pavlik gets starts for the Winnipeg Jets?
I see what you're saying.
It's a poorly written question.
I agree with that. There was a lot. It was open to a lot of interpretations. I'm going to go under. I think that there's going to be some could be some growing pains within the organization, and you never know. Maybe they call Pavlik up for a few games.
Since the Winnipeg Jets returned to Winnipeg, the team has given up the most 4-on-5 shorthanded goals in the NHL, with 229 in 376 games played.
Wouldn't that be 5-on-4?
When they were four, they had four skaters against the opposition's five. So they were not. They were on. They were shorthanded. Is the point? They were 4-on-5 situation. You understand?
Well, that would be power play goals then.
No,
as if you're shorthanded, you're giving up a power play goal.
Yes. Okay. The Jets were giving up the most power play goals. Fine, but they were getting victimized in shorthanded situations.
Next year, Drew, I'm writing these questions out.
Next year, you might not be on the show because I might kill you.
Drew, that's. Recorded. Yeah. Hot mic, Drew.
The fewest shorthanded goals against in the season for the Jets was 47 in 2013-14. This year, the Jets will surrender over or under 48.5 goals while playing one man short.
I think under. I think the Jets' penalty kill is going to be better this year. I think Jamie Compan is going to help a lot. He's an excellent coach, has a very impressive resume with the LA Kings and the Chicago Blackhawks, so I think it's going to be under, Drew.
I think special teams this year has gotten a boost in the arm, and I think that you're going to see a difference. The fans are saying hopefully less penalties, but I think that they'll be under.
Last question, thank God. Last year, the Jets' 5-on-5 save percentage was .920, 23rd overall in the NHL. 2 years ago, when the Jets made the playoffs, their 5-on-5 save percentage was .928, 9th in the NHL. The Jets' save percentage in 5-on-5 situations this year will be over or under .923, which was tied for 15th last season.
I think it's going to be under, unfortunately. I think the Jets will be better defensively than they were last year, but I think they're going to struggle without Jacob Trouba in the lineup. And I think Connor Hellebuyck and Michael Hutchins, knowing that they are the two goalies in the NHL, will benefit Connor Hellebuyck probably the most, but I don't think they'll be top 10 in the league.
You know, the absence of Jacob Trouba can't be understated. You just see it. But I'm going to go with Ezzie. I think I'm going under. I just don't think that. I think that they, you know, especially Connor Hellebuyck, I think he has the talent to be there, obviously. But combined, I think it's going to be under.
That's it for the over-under for the Winnipeg Jets for the 2016-17 season. When we come back, we talk about the Jets and their bottom-pairing defense. Is this an area that they need to acquire a player in order to shore up? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve. On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
He curls back toward the line. Sherratt, a shot. He scores! Ben Sherratt, a blast from the point on a one-timer. Here's Postma, moves in, shoots, and scores! Paul Postma on a great drive deep.
Stafford into the Washington zone around Green. Centers, loose puck, score! Mark Stewart! And the Winnipeg Jets grab the 1-0 lead.
Postma, Sherratt, Stewart. Stewart, Sherratt, Postma.
The beautiful people.
Straight, Melchiori. Anybody else I'm missing? The Jets' bottom pairing defense still in flux. At the start of the 2016-17 NHL season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or check out their new showroom located at the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Get your jersey customized at Keener Jerseys online, keenerjerseys.com.
I wonder if Keener and Jason are Marilyn Manson fans.
Are you a Marilyn Manson fan?
I enjoy his music.
Well, Ezra is a beautiful people.
Yeah.
Person.
Person. It.
That Sweet Dreams cover that they did back in the day was a cool song.
I was never a big Marilyn Manson
guy. No, I wasn't either.
Yeah.
Isn't he Paul from Wonder Years?
Yeah, that was always the rumor. I think that has been debunked, but it's a good one. I'll go with it. You know, I got no problem with it. And, you know, nice to see Paul from the Wonder Years doing something with his life.
Yeah.
It's not like he's Winnie Cooper who's writing books about math.
Is she really?
Yeah, she's really smart. She's like an I don't know if she was an actuary.
I always had a big crush on Winnie back in the day.
How could you not? She was Winnie Cooper.
Well, she, we all grew up with Wonder Years. She was every boy's sort of crush at that age.
If she was good enough for Fred Savage, she was good enough for me.
I know this is a little bit weird, but I also used to have a crush on Jessica Rabbit, even though she was a cartoon.
All right, Ez, you're taking it into a dark place.
Let's just maybe cut Ez's mic for the next couple minutes. I think that'd probably be better off at that point in time. Anyways, the Jets' bottom pairing defense, Stewart, Melchiori, Postma, Sherratt, Strait, is that good enough for the entire year? Or is that an area that Kevin Cheveldayoff and Paul Maurice and the Jets' brain trust need to be scouring? Whether it's the waiver wires or whether it's trading a minimal asset in order to acquire somebody to fill that bottom pairing role for the Winnipeg Jets.
Drew, there's absolutely no doubt, and I think Dave would agree with me, that if...
This is about Jessica Rabbit again?
No. We're on to hockey. We're back to hockey, thank God. If we're talking about the bottom two defensemen for the Jets right now, which tonight will be Mark Stewart and Paul Postma, and by the way, I have all the confidence in the world that those two defensemen can get the job done. They're probably only going to play between 10 and 12 minutes, I would imagine, maybe at most 15 minutes. But when you're talking about Jacob Trouba, if Jacob Trouba, Drew, does not play for the Winnipeg Jets this year, they absolutely have to replace him via a trade. They have to get better on the left side. And that's, you know, no offense to Josh Morrissey, because I think Josh Morrissey has earned his right to play in the NHL. I don't know. I get a little bit nervous when Josh Morrissey, in his rookie season, guys, is playing on the top pair. Now, he's not going to play a lot on the power play, and he might not play on the penalty kill, but that still means, I believe he was at around 16 or 17 minutes, if I'm not mistaken, in his opening game. Maybe we can check that. But I know that I don't think he was that far.
Josh Morrissey played 14 minutes and 45 seconds on Thursday night against the Carolina Hurricanes.
There you go.
The bottom pairing defense, just, you know, for argument's sake, Paul Postma played 9 minutes and 7 seconds. Ben Sherratt played more, 15 minutes and 8 seconds, because Sherratt played some power, some penalty kill time during that game with Dustin Byfuglien.
Yeah, Drew. So tonight, for example, I would expect Mark Stewart to play a little bit on the penalty kill. But needless to say, I'd be a little bit more comfortable if Josh Morrissey, to start his NHL career, was on the third pair. And that's not to say that he can't play top pair, Dave, because you would know this. He played on the top pair for the Manitoba Moose at times last year. Certainly, he was always a top four defenseman for them, and he was better certainly in the second half of the season than he was to start the season. He struggled quite a bit with the pro game. But when you're talking about that bottom pair, Drew, every team has struggles on the bottom pair. If you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, who won the Stanley Cup, they had to bring in a guy like Trevor Daley to play on their third pair with Justin Schultz, for example. Mm-hmm. And Trevor Daley actually emerged as a top four defenseman for them. And when he went out with an injury, they actually missed him quite a bit. So look at the Minnesota Wild. They're playing Christian Folan tonight in place of Mike Riley, who's in his second year in the NHL. They've got Matthew Dumba there on that third pair with Jonas Brodin. The Wild are still trying to figure out third pair. So look around the entire league, and you're going to have question marks on the third pair, maybe with the exception of the really good defensive teams. Like, I'm talking about the Anaheim Ducks,
Nashville,
or the St. Louis Blues,
Nashville,
or the
Predators.
Nashville Predators, who've got Matt Carl and Yannick Weber there on the third pair. Like, not too many teams have that type of depth. So I'm a little bit concerned, but I mean, Mark Stewart's got NHL experience. We know that what Paul Postma can do. He's ideally a third pairing guy, but to me, really, it's who's going to play on that top pair and that second pair on the left side. For example, I just want to say one thing. Chris Russell, to me, Drew, he would have fit in nicely on the Jets.
Well, you mentioned Josh Morrissey, and you're concerned about Morrissey having to play bigger minutes as a sort of a top four defenseman for the Jets. And that's a valid concern. But watching Thursday night's game and watching Morrissey versus watching the pairing of Postman Sherratt, that pairing of Postman Sherratt scared the living dickens out of me, and it should scare the living dickens out of any Winnipeg Jets fan. That is a home game against not a great offensive team in the Carolina Hurricanes. And there were a couple of different opportunities or a couple different instances in the course of the game where it didn't necessarily burn the Winnipeg Jets, but their poor defensive zone coverage, their poor defensive identity of Sherratt and Postma left the Winnipeg Jets heavily exposed. And you can only imagine what that exposure is going to look like when they're on the road and they don't get last change and they're playing against a good offensive team. That's going to be a significant area of concern, I think, for Winnipeg Jets fans.
I think anybody who's not missing Jacob Trouba is out of their mind when you see what he could bring to this defensive roster on the Jets. Like, if you have Jacob Trouba, then you get exactly what Ezra is suggesting. And I think he's right. I think Josh Morrissey certainly made really nice strides last season with the Manitoba Moose. He was, you know, he came in, he had changed his style, obviously, he came in a little heavy because he tried to put on a lot of muscle and then realized that it made him a little too bulky. And his asset really is, aside from his intelligence, is his speed and his smooth skating. So when you slow down a player like Josh Morrissey, that became problematic. And he really worked on that last year. And you saw especially towards the end of the season, but throughout the year in the AHL with Manitoba, he really did start to dominate games and really like had such good vision. And he actually got injured in a game against the Iowa Wild, which unfortunately for him curtailed his season. But he really is a player that you would like to see the Jets not necessarily throw in and you know test by fire, if you will, because it would be nice if they could bring him in slowly and with less minutes, which obviously we saw him do. And further to that point, Coach Maurice said it in his comments. I don't recall exactly when, but essentially there's three locks for Coach Maurice on this defensive roster. You got Bufflin, you got Myers, and you got Enstrom. Those are his three guys. Those are his three guys, for the record,
sure,
who are going to take the minutes, because we asked him, you know, what's going to happen with Jacob Trouba's minutes. And he said, you know, rather wryly, that Tyler Myers won't complain if he's playing an extra 2 or 3 minutes a game. If he gets up to 25 minutes, it won't be the end of the world for a guy like Tyler Myers. I'm just saying this is Maurice's perspective.
Yeah, no, I get it.
So it's from his point of view, and to that point of what Ezra's saying, is that you're going to have those guys playing in a lot of different situations and a lot of different opportunities, and they're going to be sucking up the minutes. So you're right. It's not an ideal third pairing by any stretch of the imagination, however you compose it, whichever one of those moving parts you put in there.
And take the Jacob Trouba situation sort of out of the picture for a couple minutes. You know, obviously we don't know what the resolution to that is going to be. And we won't know that for sure for another 6 weeks when, you know, the D-Day, the December 1st day, will have come and gone pretty close to that, where he'll either be a member of the Winnipeg Jets, he'll be a member of a different NHL team, or he won't be playing in the NHL. Even so, you know, so take Trouba out of the equation. For the next 6 weeks, can the Jets, you know, go with a bottom pairing of, you know, or a combination of Stewart, Postma, Sherratt? Or is that just going, do they need to do something in the interim before the Trouba phenomenon is resolved?
Yes, I think they do, but I don't think you're as worried now as you would be, you know, later on in the season, for example, if the Jets are really struggling, you know, 20, 25 games into the season. But I think it has everything to do with the Jacob Trouba situation, because I think if the Jets do decide to trade Jacob Trouba, it will be for a left-shot defenseman. So to me, Drew, I know, you know, the point of the segment is to talk about the third pair, but for me, really, it's about the top four defensemen that I'm really concerned about, and I guess the two are both related. But when it comes to Josh Morrissey and Dustin Bufflin playing together on a top pair, you know, tonight, for example, they could be paired up against the Eric Staal, Zach Parise line, or they could be paired up against the Mikko Koivu, Mikael Granlund, Chris Stewart line. And those are two very good scoring lines in the NHL. For example, if the Winnipeg Jets are playing against the Dallas Stars, they play them twice later this month. You're either going up against the Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn line, or you're going up against the Jason Spezza, Patrick Sharp, Yuri Hudler line. Like, that's where I worry if a guy like Josh Morrissey can defend against top lines in the NHL, right?
Well, but never mind Josh Morrissey defending against those top lines. But wait till the Jets are playing in Dallas. That's coming up October 25th.
Yep.
They're playing in Dallas. And Paul Maurice, you know, throws out Postma and Sherratt, or Postma and Stewart, or Stewart and Sherratt, and Lindy Ruff counters with Sagan and Ben.
Right, but
that's a hard matchup for Tyler Myers and Toby Enstrom. Never mind a tough matchup for the Jets. Third pairing defense.
Yeah, but ideally, Drew, you have your top four defensemen going up against those lines, and on
but
the
you
road,
don't get
sure,
last change.
Right. Well, of course, but that applies to any team. But so what I'm saying is I'm more concerned about the top two pairs because those guys will typically play against other teams' top forwards. So the bottom pair to me isn't as much of a concern because I think maybe if Trouba's in the lineup, then Josh Morrissey's on the third pair, and you still would have those same concerns, right? So I think I'm more concerned about how Josh Morrissey does playing in the top four. That's all I'm saying.
You're valid in what you're saying. We'll, of course, keep an eye on the Winnipeg Jets' defense and the defensive pairings and how they play out. We go to break. When we come back, Mike Eagles, former Winnipeg Jets player. He'll be in town next weekend for the Alumni Classic. He's on the line. Mike Eagles up next here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.